Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
It's Wednesday, November 7th, 2012, and this is our post-election edition of KBIA's Views of the News. Hi, I'm Mike McKean, Director of the Futures Lab at the Reynolds Journalism Institute, and I'm joined this week by Views regulars and Missouri School of Journalism colleagues Lee Wilkins and Charles Davis. Our topic this week, of course, media messages from yesterday's national, state, and local elections. Voters gave President Obama a comfortable electoral college win and Missouri's Claire McCaskill a new lease on life in the Senate. We have plenty to say and a short time to do it, so we'll dispense with the teases and get right to it. But let's save our thoughts about specific media successes and failures for a few minutes, and we'll hone in on the bigger themes and memes that have emerged from the coverage so far. Lee, let's start with whether or not the real headline is nothing has changed or a lot has changed as a result of the election.
Oh, I think it's probably somewhere in between. I think that nothing has changed in the sense that if you look at the tallies of who has the majority in the Senate and who has the majority in the House and, of course, who's in the White House, in that sense, nothing has changed. But if you sort of, as we like to say, drill down about those numbers, I think there's a lot cooking there under the surface.
Well, so, Charles, a related sort of headline or theme is either Obama has a mandate for a second term or Obama doesn't have a mandate for a second term.
Or maybe the third rail, which is Obama is governing a different country today. The country is changing fundamentally, demographically, under the feet of elected officials. And I think the Obama campaign, I don't know about Mr. Obama himself, but certainly the Obama campaign figured that out 5 years ago and put together a coalition that held last night. And I think that's the sort of the macro level story, is that coalition held. He lost two states that he won last time.
Let's talk about it in more detail in just a second. But Lee, I don't want to get off this notion of whether or not there's going to be a different governing mandate, both for the president and whether or not the House and Senate Republican leaders are going to have to compromise or they're not going to have to compromise.
Well, again, I can't crawl around inside anybody's heads. If people have paid any attention to the stock market today, we're taping at about 11 o'clock. It's down substantially. So I think that in one way of looking at that is the financial markets put pressure on everybody. And in this case, I think the pressure on everybody is do not drive over that fiscal cliff. Whatever else you do, get out of the car, the air balloon, whatever it is, and don't go over that cliff.
Well, Charles, you mentioned, of course, the sort of the new reality or the new governing coalition that the president has put together. I think most of the media coverage came at that from sort of the other side, which is, well, Republicans have a Hispanic problem. Republicans have a Tea Party problem. Republicans have a women problem. Republicans have a youth problem. So say a little bit more about those sort of themes or frames from last night's coverage.
Well, I mean, you could sort of look at it either way, I guess. I tend to look at it as that the Democratic Party has created a pluralistic majority and a very diverse pluralistic majority. I mean, one only need watch the acceptance speech or the congratulatory acceptance speech of Obama and the concession speech of Romney to see the difference. It's palpable. I mean, it is a sea of white versus a color-rich, diverse scene.
Yeah, those images, you really didn't have to say any more than just to look not at the candidate, but at the people who were there to support the candidate, to get some sense of, in a visual way, this is what happened in the polling booth.
I think maybe if you exclude, say, Charles Krauthammer and a couple of folks over at Fox, even the Republican analysts on all the networks seem to say that, you know, this is the Republican Party's challenge. I mean, one of the statistics that one of them brought up, I don't remember who it was basically saying Mitt Romney did as well or better with white voters than his predecessors in the Republican Party, including some winners. He did better with older voters. But he has a problem because the demographics are shifting under him.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle, really, and it'll only get more pronounced. I mean, I was listening to NPR this morning and heard some really eye-opening numbers. The percentage of white voters in the country went from 74% to 72%, which seems like not that big of a deal. But if you don't get all of them and you lose Hispanics by this basically the same 70-odd percentile differential while the Hispanic vote grew 2 points, that explains a lot about this election.
I thought there was also some more nuanced or analysis of what the Tea Party has meant for the Republicans. I mean, clearly they energized the base and helped with taking back the House in 2010, but a lot of Republican analysts and other media people were saying last night they also were directly responsible for the Republicans not taking back the Senate.
And again, I think doing reductionism by anybody at this point is that way lies dragons. I think there were lots of things working there. The Republicans, one of the things I heard this morning on Diane Rehm was the Republicans didn't field particularly great candidates, that what's happening in that party particularly is a lot of people self-nominate. They self-nominate particularly if they have some financial support, either of their own or of others, to throw at it. And so the problem is that because we now have weak parties, strong media, something I hope we'll get back to, that the party doesn't do the sort of winnowing of the candidates that parties did 50 years ago. And that has all sorts of interesting consequences that I don't think we're really yet exploring.
Well, and it was one of the big assumptions, I think, is that super PACs were going to win this election. And in fact, I think the evidence points quite to the contrary, that what the super PACs did was eliminate moderate candidates during the Republican primary, particularly on the Senate side. I mean, let's look at our own state. A lot of that money swung toward Aiken. Aiken ekes out a shocking primary victory, which was pretty much McCaskill's only path to victory.
Right. We'll come back to that race in a minute when we talk about some of the local and state returns. And I suppose, Lee, you could say this is also reductionist thinking, but it seems to me that one thing that came out of the elections last night that I found really satisfying was the fact that turnout overall, Republican and Democratic turnout was much higher than people predicted. And there was all of this thought about the lack of enthusiasm among Obama's base. And again, I know that it's always dangerous to try to generalize from specifics, but my daughter was one of these folks. She's at Iowa State University. She's not terribly political, frankly. And she decided at the very last minute to go vote. Now, in Iowa, they don't have early voting, but they have register on-site voting, and the polls were open until 9 p.m. Central Time, and she was literally standing in line at 9 o'clock and got to register and vote at the same time. And all over the country, we saw the turnout was up, and especially the enthusiasm among young voters was still there.
I think the enthusiasm among young voters was still there, and then this was something that as I was listening to the coverage this morning, I realized that I had failed to take account for, which was the level of I have this word for it, the level of fury that people had about what they interpreted as various voter suppression attempts in multiple states in the country, and how person after person said, this is my moral obligation is to go and vote so that I tell these people that it's not right to suppress my vote. And I think that again, that was something that Nate Silver, as smart as he is, lots of other people, I didn't see that talked about very much. But as I'm listening to people explain their own motivations this morning, I think it mattered more than I realized it did.
Let's start to move a little closer to actual media performance. And I want to start with advertising, actually, because one of the other sort of memes that came out of last night's coverage was that the president did a great job this summer with his advertising strategy of basically carpet bombing Romney and defining who he was. He didn't respond and define himself. Does that seem to be a fair conclusion to draw from the campaign?
I don't know if it's entirely fair. I mean, I think it's fair to say he carpet bombed him and defined him. But it wasn't like Mitt Romney was some amorphous thing that people couldn't really understand. I mean, he is Bane is he. Making that connection to the voter's mind took a took more work than I thought it would. But once it set in, I think that was hard to undo. But I do think Romney did a really excellent job during the fall of pushing back and trying to define himself differently and moving toward the middle.
You know, in the end, though, I mean, there were billions of dollars in ad spending by the candidates, by the super PACs, all kinds of campaign expenditures, months and months of news coverage. And in some ways, as we said at the top, in some ways, we're right at the status quo.
In some ways, we are right at the status quo, but I think one of the real questions that I bring out of this whole thing is, what is the impact for Citizens United on journalism, on news coverage? It's going to take us a while to go back and look at what was actually done and try to stack that up against I heard a figure this morning that on state ballot measures, things that normally don't get a lot of news coverage, that there was more than $750 million, that's money with a B, dollars of PAC money spent on ballot measure initiatives. And that, to me, is part of the work of governing that journalists don't cover very well anyway. And to see that kind of money flowing there really concerns me.
Well, it's really interesting because the super PAC money that flooded ballot initiatives and propositions tended to do better than the super PAC money that flooded into, Montana in the tester race, in Massachusetts in the Warren race. I mean, it'll be interesting. I bet there's a lot of super PAC meetings in the next couple of weeks where they've got a map of the United States and they're going, we poured a staggering amount of money into Montana, for example, and Senator Tester, I think, used it, actually turned it against itself by saying, look at all this outside money that's pouring in the state. Is that the way you want your politics run? And it worked.
I'll be curious to see, though, whether all of that money, the super PAC money, had more impact on sort of low information races, especially at the state and local. We won't know but we'll see. Lee, before we get on to some specifics of how news organizations and personalities did last night, say a little bit more about this notion of strong media, weak parties.
Well, we used to have strong political parties, aka smoke-filled rooms, where this goes back to Harry Truman. So Missouri has a good history with this, where the party leaders, however you want to define leader, would essentially define who the candidates were. In the years between, say, 1950 and about 1975, much of that work was taken over by the media, where candidates campaigned publicly using a lot of television, radio, and direct mail, and sort of went around, if you will, the party apparatus. So I think the system we've got now is one where the political party, I think the Republicans are a great example, gets captured by interest groups, but the campaign itself becomes mediated. And so it's really a place where the political parties have lost a lot of strength, a lot of ability to do the sort of things that they did historically, and instead we've put it all in TV, on the newspapers, and increasingly on the web.
All right, so let's look at some specific examples of performance from last night from TV and newspapers, and let's start with the New York Times statistician Nate Silver. He offered big odds in favor of the president's success, and he pretty much nailed it. The Times was quick to post an I told you so video on its website last night, and Silver said that his model benefited greatly from better polling.
On the whole, the polls had it were quite good, and the polls are usually quite good. A number of cycles in a row now, any one poll is often a little bit dubious, but when you average them together, they seem to do a better job of kind of calibrating where the average voter is.
So Charles, vindication for Silver, but also, I think, for the concept of aggregating poll results rather than relying so much on specific individual polls.
Yeah. If you're unfamiliar with Nate Silver, and I don't know how anybody can be at this point, but if you are, he came out of baseball, of all the things, and was sort of one of the movers and shakers behind the new empiricism around baseball statistics. If you've read or seen the film Moneyball, he was one of the early Moneyball proponents. And he eventually said, you know, this could work politically. And it was fascinating, and I think in many ways a microcosm of the election in many ways. Empiricism versus gut, and empiricism won handily.
Now, Lee, it seems to me also that the exit polls kind of got it right this past time. There was some worry because the networks didn't want to spend as much money. They were focusing largely on the battleground states. We all remember from 2004 when the early exit polls seemed to give John Kerry the election and the media ran with that when they shouldn't have. But last night, it seemed like the exit polls, one, were right, and two, the networks were much more cautious, as they should have been, not to overinterpret or go out on a limb too early.
I hate to say this because the minute I say it, I'm going to get proven wrong, but it seems to me that it's possible that we're learning from our mistakes, especially the mistakes that we've made in, say, the last decade or so. So there's not an over-reliance on exit polls. I actually think in some ways the questions from the exit polls were a little bit smarter. So they weren't just asking who'd you vote for, but they were asking sort of what were the components in your decision-making. I also thought an interesting thing about the Times is while the Times has Nate Silver, if you watch the Times coverage on its website last night, it was behind the curve in calling many states, even though it has a very well-known journalist slash blogger who's like way, 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 way on the leading edge of trying to call things.
Speaking of calling, Charles, let's talk about Fox News. Now, I think this is obviously sort of a weird juxtaposition last night. I mean, you had Bret Baier and Megyn Kelly, the on-air journalists, their exit polling analysts. I would argue that they played it straight for the most part. They made those sort of state-by-state projections for President Obama just as quickly and accurately as the other networks. But then here's Karl Rove, who on the air is actually challenging the analysts as they're calling Ohio. We had this really fascinating piece that's up on our blog this morning from Slate, The Five Stages of Grief at Fox News. What do you make of sort of the split personality there?
I thought it was the most fascinating single moment of the evening's coverage, and I happened to watch it live. I was at the Ragtag at a viewing party, in fact, and the Ragtag had a CNN room and a Fox room. And I kind of bounced back and forth for a while, and I happened to be right at the right place at the right time, and I watched as Karl Rove dispatched Megyn Kelly, I think,
right.
To walk a la Saturday Night Live down the hallway behind a building. I mean, it was captivating television because, as you know, Karl Rove projected, I think, a 300 electoral college vote. They then bring in Michael Barone, who I think predicted a 310 electoral college vote for Romney. And to watch the two of them sort of collectively walk each other down off the ledge while Rove challenges pretty much the entirety of Fox News electoral college prediction model I couldn't turn away from it. It was fascinating.
Well, Lee, I guess this will be my naive question of the day, but I'll pose it to you first. Is there any chance that the Fox News fail and what I would say is the equally egregious campaigning under the guise of news over at MSNBC all year long will have any lasting impact in favor of playing it straight news coverage?
No, and here's why. One of the things I read this morning was a Pew study that looked at the positive and negative quality of the coverage on both Fox and MSNBC. Here's what they found, which I thought was really informative. If most everybody wrote about the horse race, and we talk about that a lot. It's the horse race coverage that makes things negative. So they ran their numbers two ways. They looked at, okay, actually MSNBC was more negative about Romney than Fox was about Obama, according to this study. But if you strip out the horse race coverage and just look at the news, everybody is actually playing it right down the middle. So what would that mean? It would mean that journalists would have to change our definition of what constitutes political news. And I don't think there's a snowball's chance in, oh, pick your place, of that happening anytime soon.
All right. Now, Charles, I want to be just a little bit more optimistic, and I don't want to flog this whole media bias thing like we always do, but I do have one instance I want to bring to your attention and get your opinion about it. CBS News made a decision not to release until a couple of days ago the outtakes of their 60 Minutes interview that they did with President Obama on September 12th. Clearly, in that interview, the president refused to call the Benghazi attack an act of terrorism. Shouldn't CBS have at least aired that tape immediately after the second debate when Romney's criticism was being fact-checked by everybody?
I actually think, yeah, they absolutely should have. And it's one of those things where you are cursed if you do and cursed if you don't, probably, because, I mean, I think there were sort of decision-making processes that we will never know. But one can only walk away going, look, you had it. Why not air it? It's there.
Yeah.
There's no real defense that they can offer as a network, I don't think. I mean, people would have enjoyed knowing that on the backside. Now, that having been said, Obama could just as easily go, Yeah, I didn't say it there. I said it in the Rose Garden,
right?
Right? So it just goes on and on and on.
I mean, I just think this hurts CBS's reputation more than it might have impacted the election at all. And for it was a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah, it seems so random.
Okay, Lee, a couple of silly things before we get on to state and local.
I love it. I get naive and silly today.
Okay. NBC, their ice rink with their map. CNN's blue and red lights on top of the Empire State Building. Diane Sawyer, was she drunk or having a senior moment? That was the big, you know, meme on Twitter last night. What do you make of any of that stuff?
It's just, it's so trivial and it's so cosmetic. On the blog, you put a little thing with M&Ms, which I actually really enjoyed about how to get to 270 with M&Ms, which includes calories and, you know, all sorts of wacky math. The thing I kept noticing about the coverage last night was that while there was a lot of flashy graphics, there was also what I think some pretty dumb graphics, the ice rink being one of them. But we've moved away a little bit from everything has to be super technology oriented. And I was actually glad to see that, although I have to admit that I spent most of my time on PBS, and they had the least flash.
And I will say, I think it's actually kind of interesting and good for journalism when there's a lot of this picking at Diane Sawyer, because the anchors need to be less the focus and the news needs to be more important. I mean, Josh Groban was tweeting, I'll have what Diane Sawyer is having, or Ricky Lake retweeted, and Diane Sawyer declares tonight's winner is Chardonnay. So, you know, great. I think that we could focus more on the results and less on the, you know, our personalities. Okay, let's switch gears and talk just for a bit about the biggest stories that may be emerging in the days ahead. You mentioned the fiscal cliff. Let's talk about Obamacare. What happens there? Is it protected? Is it saved by election results?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think it's a clear victory for Obamacare. Obamacare will be here. If you are one of the people who really loathes that message, then I urge you to get used to it, because it's not going anywhere.
Lee, does the president try to act quickly and decisively on immigration reform and climate change, or would that, as we'll be seeing in stories, risk squandering his chance of building a legacy around fiscal and entitlement reform?
I honestly don't know. I mean, this is the place where what the president can do is the subject of internal things, but also external stuff. So, for example, if Obama really wants to do something about climate change, I think he's got a partner named Chris Christie, and I would urge him to take advantage of this very teachable moment. On the other hand, I would sort of like for him to go back in the presidential playbook and essentially do a Lyndon Johnson with Boehner and McConnell to basically get them alone in a dark room with or without smoke and to say, unless you decide to do something differently, I am going to start campaigning against you in your districts, and it's going to start next week. And the first person I'm sending in is Clinton. That's the way Johnson got Congress to cooperate. And I think Obama needs to take a page out of that book.
Charles, we haven't talked much about local and state races yet. And I want to focus for just a moment on whether or not there should be more journalism around what happened with the referenda around the country in Maine and Maryland and Washington State. Voters legalized same-sex marriage. They rejected a ban on it in Minnesota. Voters legalized pot in Colorado and Washington State. What do we make of that, and what more should journalists do in telling those stories?
I think it's a groundswell. I mean, it's a fascinating story, firstly, and it's a groundswell. I mean, this is the first time voters went to the polls, and instead of defending themselves against, you know, attacks on gay marriage, openly claimed gay marriage. This is an amazing moment in American political history.
I think it goes back to the very first thing we were talking about, is the nature of the country is changing. Mm-hmm. You can like it or you cannot like it, but I think everybody needs to face it. These things are not what they were even a decade ago.
Right. Just going to focus on it for a quick second, but it is kind of interesting since we're now in full fundraiser mode at KBIA and other public media operations around the country. What does the election say? What sort of stories might we write about the prospects for public media funding, given what happened last night? Improved or damaged because of the status quo being maintained?
Oh, I think Big Bird wins. I don't actually think he was ever going to lose, but I think that this is one of the things that as everybody tries to find the middle, I suspect that public funding of a lot of things is not going to be wiped off the map. Now, that could be a really naive response, Mike.
Okay, we have a couple of minutes left. Let's turn briefly our attention to Missouri election results and the media coverage there. We briefly mentioned Senator Claire McCaskill getting this new lease on life. Was it because fundamentally of media coverage of Todd Akin's legitimate rape and pregnancy comment, or is that too reductionist?
No, I don't think that's too reductionist, but, well, maybe just slightly, because that wasn't the only thing Todd Akin had done. Todd Akin was an extreme candidate with a very extreme record that was documented a mile long. It was the one area in which McCaskill's people could find tremendous room in the middle to operate, which is what she did ultimately.
I thought it was an interesting story, by the way, Lee. Missouri in some ways was not the bellwether or state, not for the presidency, but look at the results otherwise in the state. Democrats won every statewide vote except for lieutenant governor, where the incumbent Peter Kinder held on there. Right. But Republicans expanded a little bit their majority in the state legislature. So in some ways, Missouri was kind of like the national electorate in terms of maintaining the status quo.
Well, I think in terms of maintaining the status quo, but also in terms of ballot splitting. And I don't think Missouri has ever been known as a place where people split their ballots a whole lot. But it happened. It obviously happened last night, not just between the presidency and then the other statewide offices, but between the statewide offices and what people did locally. Now, I have no idea if that's part of just Missouri being Missouri or whether that's part of a national trend. It's really hard to tell, but it's interesting.
Charles, I'll be curious to see some second and third and fourth day stories about the fact that another attempt to raise a cigarette tax to help education went down, but this time only by about a point and a half.
Yeah, and another attempt to inject politics in our judiciary failed spectacularly.
And I'd also like to see some really subtle stories about how Kurt Schaefer, one of our state senators in mid-Missouri, held on to his Senate seat against a strong Democratic opponent in a Democratic-leaning district.
Well, I don't know that his district is necessarily Democratic-leaning, but I think this is the place where Tip O'Neill's thing about all politics is local. In Kurt Schaefer's district, you can reduce it almost to all politics is about education. And that was a place where Schaefer actually had a record that a lot of people in his district liked and approved of and wanted to support.
I think it will be interesting to – we didn't talk much about social media today, and I don't know what lasting impact they had on the election. They certainly had some impact on how people engage with each other. And we did an interesting experiment last night. KBIA, KOMU, and the Missourian sponsored a virtual watch party online where people could offer their comments. Now, in some ways, there weren't a lot of active participants in there. Many of them were kind of J-school related. But we did a little early look at the analytics and saw that there were 1,500 unique individuals who at one time or another at least checked that out. Now, I don't know exactly what that means yet. We got to do a lot more digging, but maybe this model of local media banding together to get people to act, to engage outside the circles of social media might be really useful to us. Well, that may be our fastest 28 minutes ever, but we're through for this week. So thanks to Charles Davis and Lee Wilkins for staying up late and coming in early to record their thoughts on this day after the election day. Thanks also to our technical team, Director Travis McMillan with RJI, and audio engineer Pat Akers with KBIA for putting it all together for us. And thank you for listening and watching. If you missed part of the program or want to share it with others, audio and video streams are available under the Talk Shows tab at kbia.org. We also will welcome your questions, comments, or suggestions at views@kbia.org. I'm Mike McKean. Lee will do the driving next Wednesday on another edition of KBIA's Views of the News.